वासुदेवाय
saying something that's stated very simply in Bhagavad Gita. So
If you have the intricate part, you gotta pay attention because it's intricate. Silence, hell. In the Vedas, there are directions for two kinds of activities. Activities for those who are attached to material enjoyment, and activities for those who are materially detached. In consideration of these two kinds of activities, there are two kinds of people who have different symptoms. If one wants to see two kinds of activities in one person, that is contradictory. But both kinds of activities may be neglected by a person who is transcendentally situated. That last part was like, just went off the map. Two kinds, no kinds. Report question for all time. The Vedic activities are so designed that the conditioned soul who has come to enjoy the material world may do so under direction, so that at the end he becomes detached from such material enjoyment and is eligible to enter into the transcendental position. The four different social orders, brahmacharya, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, gradually train the person to come to the platform of transcendental life. The activities and the dress of a grahastha or householder are different from those of a sannyasi, one who renounces the order of life. It is impossible for one person to adopt both orders. A sannyasi cannot act like a householder, nor can a householder act like a sannyasi. But above these two kinds of persons, one who engages in material activities and one who has renounced material activities, there is the person who is transcendental to both. Lord Shiva is in the transcendental position because, as stated before, he is always absorbed in the thought of Lord Vasudeva within himself. Therefore, neither the activities of the grahastha nor those of the sannyasi and renounced order can be applicable for him. He is in the Paramahamsa stage, the highest perfectional stage of life. The transcendental position of Lord Shiva is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, texts 52 and 53. It is stated there that when one fully engages in the transcendental service of the Lord by performing activities without good results, one is elevated to the transcendental position. At that time, he has no obligation to follow the Vedic injunctions or the different rules and regulations of the Vedas. When one is above the directions of the Vedic ritualistic injunctions for attaining different allurements, and is fully absorbed in transcendental thought, which means thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service, one is in the position called buddhi yoga or samadhi, ecstasy. For a person who has attained this stage, neither the Vedic activities for realizing material enjoyment nor those for renunciation are applicable. So text 20 again. Karma, pavritam cha nivritam apritam vede virincho bhaya lingam ashritam virohitat yo gapadaika kartari dravyam tata brahmani karma narchati. In the Vedas, translation, in the Vedas there are directions for two kinds of activities. Activities for those who are attached to material enjoyment, and activities for those who are materially detached. In consideration of these two kinds of activities, there are two kinds of people. What are the symptoms? If one wants to see two kinds of activities in one person, that is contradictory. But both kinds of activities may be neglected by a person who is transcendentally situated.
Not regulated by causes of Vedas.
senses, and the urges of the senses, and follow the urges of the senses, and that's animal life. No regulation. And regulation. According, so it's, there's an effort, the chief contradictory, that if people knew that they're unregulated, that when the goal is to become again beyond the regulations, they might be happier or something. But there's this big push to get them regulated. Regulated by the codes of the Vedas. As Prabhupada is writing in the purport for text 51, the rituals of the Vedas. And then in this verse is saying, become indifferent to the rituals of the Vedas. Well, people are already indifferent to the rituals of the Vedas. They don't care. Because they want something else. So, it takes some encouragement to become regulated by the codes of the Vedas, become civilized. And civilization begins. Human life begins. Mentioned yesterday, Prabhupada's statement is when one accepts the varna and ashram system. That is, there's regulations enjoined in the Vedas by which to fulfill desires under the authority of and regulated by the Vedas. Then we'll go a little bit further. There's the sakama. There's karma yoga, then the purpose of those, the karma khanda. Ultimately, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this very nicely. Because in order to engage properly in karma khanda, you have to have brahmana, qualified brahmana, to guide you in those activities. So there's association with someone who's, at least should be, qualified to do those rituals. And then there's, in principle, there's the acceptance of higher authority. There's persons to whom we're accountable and from whom we derive benediction. So there's this, it's not just animal life, there's recognition of some higher authority. Ultimately, there's recognition of Narayan, because the beginning of all the Prabhupada rituals, there's he's the Lotha of the Yajna. And then there's a further evolving stage which says it's not just immediate gratification, it's deferred gratification. It's, there's something after this moment that's the next moment that I'm preparing myself for. And then ultimately it's beyond this life to a next life. Life beyond this life. Life after death. So then what is it that lives after death? Some understanding of the soul that lives after death. So if I'm going to be concerned about the soul that lives after death, what about the soul? It's a concern for the eternal soul that starts to evolve. What's the best interest of the eternal soul? So it leads to this interest in moksha or detachment, the if done properly, this, so there's sakama karma yoga, then nishkama karma yoga. Someone may take up, okay, I should recognize the Supreme. I'll offer some fruits under the Supreme, because if I just engage in karma khanda, then I'm bound to reactions, even the good ones. So when I become released from the bondage of the fruits of my work, but I still have desires. So it's like a mix. I have desires, my desires are fulfilled, and I get some lasting benefit, everlasting benefit. Then through the gradual nishkama karma yoga. Then by good association, when we contact a devotee and then find out about direct devotional service unto Krishna, just like chapter 12, the book, The Other Direction, by performing being sacrificed in the supreme, one may become elevated to the point of wanting to follow the regulations of bhakti, sadhana bhakti. And through the regulations of sadhana bhakti comes the stage where, just like it's described here, where mind is fixed upon Krishna, and intelligence is always engaged within him, and one, in that condition, one abides in him always without a doubt. Chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita describes like that. So, Daksha is in the Pravritti program. He understands yajnas are needed to fulfill desires. And he's got big time desires. Lots of people have big time desires, but he's one of them. And his value is, you gotta do these karma khanda rituals, these pravritti marg rituals. And my daughter's husband, he doesn't do any of those. So, that disturbs me. His existence, the way he exists, disturbs me. So, Sati is giving her father a Bhagavad Gita lesson. It says, those practices, those rituals, are for gradual elevation, but one who has attained that stage of elevation, well, they no longer have an interest in fulfilling material desires. They're on this nivritti stage. Now, in this application of this term nivritti is used differently for devotees than it is for the non-devotee ritualists. Because there's a stage of renouncing that karma tyag is very different than karma phala tyag. Opposition is karma phala tyag. Those that aren't devotees and they have this sense of karma tyag, that's what Arjuna was wanting to do. Oh, Arjuna Krishna, let me just become a renunciate. I'll give up my work. Karma tyag. And Krishna's reply is, you're not qualified for karma tyag. You have to perform your work. Because if you fail to perform your work, that will be sin. You'll incur sin. You're not qualified. He's speaking to him in that way. So he is saying that Lord Shiva is beyond the karma tyag, or that sense of renunciation of fruitive works, renunciation of the worldly duties of a sannyasi. He's beyond that. I'll give a more modern example, and a more modern example is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gopishwaras Babaji Maharaj, and Bhaktisiddhanta, 1, 2, 3 in succession, were very critical of the pretenders, the so-called followers of the Goswamis who weren't qualified, who imitated the position of the Goswamis by putting on Babaji Vesh, taking Babaji Diksha, but not having a pure heart, and in the position of Babaji Vesh, smoking bees and etc., 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 doing sense gratification things that brought a bad name to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, the Goswamis, and Lord Chaitanya himself, because they were not qualified. Conversely, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, by his namvrata, he demonstrated that he had the qualification of, he was beyond the restrictions of grahastha or sannyas. His position was that of a brahmachari during that stage of his life, but he took this nam vrata, a chanting 3 billion names. In the performed this vrata of chanting 3 lakhs of names every day for 10 years to fulfill that vrata. 3 lakhs of names is 3 times 64 rounds. Some of you probably chanted 64 rounds in a day. That's very nice. Good for your heart. Try 2 times 64 rounds. Try 3 times 64 rounds. And then try doing it for 10 years. For us, it's not possible. Physically and spiritually, we don't have that adhikara. Just even in terms of time, do the math. 16 rounds takes 2 hours. Times 4 is 64 rounds, takes 8 hours. Times 3 is 24 hours. So let's assume that he chanted his, you know, 16 rounds in less than 2 hours. But it really, you know, just for taking care of your body and sleeping and eating and bathing and passing, that takes some time. So what did he do for 10 years? He was absorbed in the whole game. Now our minds would be too restless to even consider something like that. So he demonstrated, he was on that platform. He was beyond regulation. And still he took the order of sannyas. He came down from that position under the order of his spiritual master and his father to preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So to do so, he took the order of sannyas, which is regulated. He was beyond the regulation, but he accepted that for the purpose of service. So like that, in our modern circumstance, Sati is saying about Lord Shiva, he's beyond the regulation. You don't understand his position. We'll do it again. There are these two. In the Vedas, there are directions for 2 kinds of activities. Pravritti, activities for those who are attached to material enjoyment. That's Vidya, Daksha, Prabhu. And activities for those who are materially detached. In terms of the Vedic picture, that's Nivritti. And there's 2 kinds of persons that match those 2 kinds of activities, and don't expect you to find in one person the activities of both. If your hasta would be inappropriate if they didn't work, didn't engage in earning money to maintain their family, they're being irresponsible. It would be inappropriate. And if the sannyasi went to take a job in a commercial world, that would be inappropriate. They're detached. It's their duty to absorb themselves in other activities principally. They're chanting and preaching and so forth. To expect both activities in the same person is inappropriate, or is contradictory. However, both kinds of activities may be neglected. The duties of the grihastha and the duties of the sannyasi may be neglected by one who is transcendentally situated, just as Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. I'll read again. When your intelligence is passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. Prabhupada's explanation. What does that mean? It's those who became indifferent to the rituals of the Vedas. How did they do so? By absorption in devotional service. So that's what we're supposed to do. Become absorbed in devotional service. To the degree that we're not absorbed in devotional service, then we must perform the duties of Varnashram. When Prabhupada was introducing this, the Varnashram talks, he was preceding it by saying, my disciples, they're not chanting their 16 rounds. They're not chanting their Gayatri three times a day. That's the elevator, the awakening of bhakti to situate one in devotional service. Because they're not doing so, they must be regulated by the varnashram duties. For one who is, so to say, those who are situated in absorption, in transcendental sound vibration, hearing the chanting, awakening the bhakti, engaging in activities of bhakti, in that consciousness, then the rituals of karmakanda are not any longer required. Now persons, we have this experience, persons that don't understand devotional service wonder, why aren't we doing this ritual, that ritual, the other ritual? What's wrong with the people? Because of not understanding. Now, the platform of bhakti, the platform of bhakti is the purpose for which those rituals are devised or provided in the cult of the ages, to become detached from desires for material enjoyment, come to the stage of renunciation of fruitive work, at least renunciation of the fruits of fruitive work, instead there to be offered to the Supreme. Through karma yoga, then nishkam karma yoga, then bhakti yoga, and then buddhi yoga, the fixed consciousness. So the Bhagavatam is giving us this understanding from Bhagavad Gita in a very nice setting. And the Bhagavad Gita class giver is Sati, and the audience is her dear father, who she's about to reject because of his offenses. Okay, so any comments or questions about this subject?
Publicly to exhibit the activities of the sadhaka.
are setting a standard. Second part. But sometimes they're spontaneous. The feelings of spontaneous love for Krishna will come out. And in so doing, that eclipses the regulative practice that they would otherwise be very strongly maintaining. And that's not a fault that they neglected something of the regulative platform, while something that on the ecstatic platform supersedes and eclipses the regulative practice. They are not in fault for that. That's a description you should have qualified with consistently here about ones who are the ecstatic platform. It's right in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna has a predisposition by Krishna's arrangement, and his predisposition is he wants to not engage in the battle and take up some other activity, not to be idle, but take up another activity, the activity of one who's detached. So Krishna gives, as I expressed earlier, Krishna gives the argument, you don't have the qualification, you must perform your duty in order to become released from your attachments, your general tendencies. You must engage in your duty in the religious manner. Then Arjuna, so to speak, evolves this idea that, well then, when I become to that, come to that stage, then I can give it up. And then Krishna says, no, even kings like Jonathan, they didn't give up. They performed their duties to set an example. So now you perform your duty, and then you perform your duty. You're obliged. There's no checking. You can't. There's no escape. You perform your duty. Even in this very elevated state, to set an example. Then one more time. But if that person who is on that very elevated stage, by expressions, uncontrollable expressions of their ecstatic stage of realization, neglect something on the regulative platform, there's no harm. There's no fault. And then, provided it's a genuine, not just a fundamentally solved neglect. Does that address your question?
Yeah. How about this? I was curious to see that, of course, you can neglect most of the year to worship a period of time.
Sure. And here's an application example. The standard, according to Hari Bhakti Vilas, while you're worshipping the deity, you don't stop for anything. Like there's an example in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Krishna Das Kaviraj was engaged in deity worship. No, his brother was engaged in deity worship. There was some, he was neglectful of, I think it was communicating to Ram. Because there's a principle that says you don't stop the deity worship. But he was, you know, on this other platform. But he was neglecting communicating to Ram. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami chastised him. Because he's such a great devotee of Lord Nityananda, and you don't have respect for Lord Nityananda, you're disrespecting the indicate to the realm. You'll be punished for this. You'll fall from your spiritual position. Or another example is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in a state of ecstasy
he came into the place where Shiva's pundit was worshipping his Shalagram Shiva. And he continued worshipping his Shalagram Shiva. But Lord Chaitanya told him, stop, you know, just worship me. He sat on the throne, on the altar. Stop worshipping him. When bring your family members, bring all the puja paraphernalia, worship me. Because Shiva's planet was in this position of being in great anxiety because the rumor was the Muslim king was coming with a boatload of soldiers to destroy Navadvipa because of all the chanting of the holy name that was going on. And Shrivas was to blame for it all. So he was thinking, oh, I'm to blame. I'll summon the Vaishnavas will be hurt because of me. So he was feeling very hurt, you know, unhappy, disturbed. So to remove that disturbance, Lord Chaitanya performed his mila. He told him, I'll destroy the king. I destroyed all of his soldiers. And so on and so on. So it's an example of, there's a vidhi that says when you're worshipping the deity, you don't stop. You don't have conversation. You know, it should be like that with japa. For worshipping the Lord. We don't like, you know, Hare Krishna blah blah, Hare Krishna blah blah. It's japa. That's how it should be. One of in Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explicitly points that out, that one of the examples of inattentive chanting is one should complete. Now this is not like, this is not a hard and fast rule for all this kind of devotees, but it's stated in Hari Bhaktivinoda Thakur that you may have to do something in the course of chanting, but complete the round that you're chanting, you know, so that you give your full attention while chanting, and then you know, go to some climate control thing, or get some water, or whatever it is you're going to do. But we're used to this multi-processing thing, where we're, oh, this is a good time to do six other things while I'm finishing my chanting. And that's, well, it's not a loss to be nice. It's something you should be very focused. However, if you're in the midst of chanting and an elevated Vaishnava comes, pay your obeisances. I'm chanting. Like when Balaram entered the place where the Puranas were being narrated, and the speaker didn't stand to respect him, thinking, "Why am I just a, so I should complete this?" Bala Ramaharsha Suda got goosey dust. So a contemporary example of that is one is Rukmini Maharaji, Anuttama's wife, Rukmini from Potomac. She was the head pujari of Radha Govinda in New York for some period of time. And during that period of time, Prabhupada was visiting. So we had this plan. He was coming to the airport, so we decided, the president decided, everybody will go to the airport. And then the person who's supposed to drive Prabhupada's car will get lost and all that. We'll take a longer route, not get lost, we'll take a longer route. All the devotees will get back and then be Prabhupada at the temple. Well, it worked out just the opposite. Everyone got lost and Prabhupada reached the temple first. And so when he came into the temple, there was nobody. There's no kirtan, no reception. And so he went right up to the altar. And he was paying his obeisances before the deities. And Rukmini said she didn't know what to do. She's, because it was like this, a little raised platform, marble platform above the floor level. And she was on that little marble platform, and he's Prabhupada down here. And she's doing the aarti for Radha Govinda. So what am I supposed to do? And she just followed her heart, and she put down the bell, put down the incense, and got down on the floor where Prabhupada was and paid obeisance to Sister Prabhupada. And he got back on the altar and picked up the bell and got the incense and continued. And then later she asked Prabhupada, did I do the right thing? Should I continue worshiping the deity, or should I have paid obeisance to you? And he said, you did the right thing. Anything else? Before you came to class, no one else has pushed. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.